8 in the morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. The name Sonia Van Meter might be familiar to you because we've talked with Sonia, I don't know, 3 or 4 times on the show over the last couple of years, because Sonia has the possibility of being the very first person or one of the very first people ever to land and live on Mars. If the Mars One project ever gets its $9 billion together, they're going to send Sonia, possibly, she's like down to, I think, we'll check in with her, I think she's down to the final 100. Sonia Van Meter joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Sonia, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning. What's going on?
Boy, look at listen. You sounded so awake at 2:30 in the morning. Are we talking to?
Moment.
Are you in Austin right now? Are you in Texas?
I am. I'm in Austin, Texas.
Well, thank you for being up in the middle of the night with us. We appreciate it. Thanks for getting out of the bar early, I guess I should say.
The things I do for you,
yes,
I swear.
You are the sweetest person, the sweetest Martian I've ever known. So real quick, because I want to talk to you about your other life, your real life, but let's talk about the fantasy life for a minute. The Mars One project you and I have talked about many times on the show is a private venture trying to raise money to send people to Mars. Your story became kind of famous because you became one of the 100 finalists, and in the Mars One mission, it's a one-way ticket. You go to Mars, you live on Mars, hopefully a very long, happy life, but then you die on Mars and you never get to come back as far as they're concerned. And because you're a happily married person, this kind of created some interest because people are like, dude, what are you doing? And your husband wrote columns about it and you wrote columns about it, and it's just very interesting. Where is the Mars One mission right now?
So it's still in progress. As with any large venture like this, you know, they hit a few... I had a few pitfalls on the way toward making that $6 billion that they need to raise.
Yeah.
But, you know, the plan is still in effect. You know, we've delayed it, you know, a couple of years at this point so that, you know, we have extra time, you know, to find those extra dollars. They're still on track to get all of us together in the next 2 years to start the training process. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a huge surprise to anyone that the finding funds for this is going a little more slowly than originally anticipated.
Is there a lot of competition now with NASA looking at Mars? And I think there's other private ventures too, right? Is that a trouble for Mars One, or does the extra attention bring hopefully added benefit?
I think it's the latter. I think that the more people are interested in it and the more people are talking about it, the more it stays in the forefront of everyone's thoughts. So I'm super encouraged. I'm always encouraged when I hear people like Elon Musk and Richard Branson, you know, and the Jeff Bezos of the world, you know, talking about how we need to get to Mars and what their plans are to get to Mars. I think it's the more we talk about it, the more we think about it, the more competition there is, you know, the better it is for everyone. You know, the one step closer that we get, you know.
And you're still on board if it comes through, if you get selected to be one of the finalists, you are
I'm still on board.
You're still going.
Absolutely.
I'm moving to Mars.
Let's do this.
And have you, you know, it's interesting because you have a young husband, you are young and your husband's young and you're going to leave him behind. And so I wonder, are there women in the neighborhood who kind of slyly say, Sonia, when are you going to Mars again? Like they're planning it out on the calendar?
Well, they're not saying it to my face.
Okay.
But I mean, who knows, you know?
Oh, that will be so interesting. I hope you get to go to Mars. I really do. But, you know, will we be able to talk to you from Mars? That would be literally impossible, right? Because the delay, I imagine, in, like, communication would have to be an incredible lag, right? You would never – would you be able to communicate, like, do a FaceTime or anything with people back on Earth? Or would that be so delayed it would be hard to have a conversation?
You couldn't have a real-time conversation. Like, I couldn't – you know, you and I couldn't do this on the air, which would be a huge drag.
Yeah.
But things like texting, WhatsApp, you know, voice messages, things like that, video messages, that's all a possibility. But yeah, actual like live conversations, right now, yeah, it's like at very, very, at the fastest, it would be a 7-minute delay in between messages.
Seven-minute delay. Wow.
Yeah.
So we're on a 7-second delay here on the radio, just so nobody curses and gets us in trouble. You'd be on a 7-minute delay. Man.
Plenty of time.
Yeah, no kidding. That's interesting. So, yeah, that would be tough. You'd have to pre-tape those interviews. And I'll ask you a question, and then I'll wait. Okay, so, Sonia, we have never talked on the radio about your other life. You are an opposition researcher, a political opposition researcher. What does that mean?
Opposition research refers to the research we do in the political game. When people decide to run for office, the smart ones hire someone like me, an opposition researcher, to do public records research on themselves and on their opponents. The idea being that you want to know you know, exactly where your vulnerabilities are, you know, where your opponent is likely to attack you, but also where your opponent's vulnerabilities are and where you need to go after them.
Now, we don't hear a lot about that line of duty, but this year, just recently, we heard the rumor that Donald Trump would not let his group do opposition research on him. Do you believe that to be true? Is that what happened there?
I don't have any problem at all believing that. Everything about the Dons campaign has been, to put it politely, non-traditional. And it's always, forgive me, it's always the biggest egos who think that they don't need to do the research about me. I know me. I know what my life looks like. I'm good. And that's, wow, that's just...
Well,
it's incredible hubris and it's incredible arrogance, and his campaign is unfortunately paying the price for it now.
Are they paying the price for it? So a lot of stuff has come out about Donald Trump, but he's been such a public figure. I would think opposition research maybe comes in to play a little more when somebody's led a relatively quiet private life. But he's been speaking on Howard Stern, you know, about sexual things forever. He's been doing so much of this stuff forever. If he had hired good researchers, would they have found the Billy Bush tape? Would they have been able to say, here's the stuff they're going to dig up on you, you know, or should they have been able to know that all along because he's been out there forever anyways?
Well, the Billy Bush tape was really, that was not something an opposition researcher would find because there's no way to request that. That's not a publicly available document. But what is publicly available are all those Howard Stern shows. And it's not like this is the first time that Donald Trump has put on a live microphone. I mean, the man cannot run away from a microphone. So there was plenty of other material, not obviously, but not the bombshell that we got from Billy Bush tape. Mm-hmm. But they should have easily anticipated that he was ultimately, you know, eventually going to be attacked for something like this because there's just so much of it out there. You know, even the briefest scan of a basic internet search, you know, on this guy is going to turn up disgusting things like this. To be perfectly honest, I'm a little surprised that it took as long as it did to come out. A lot of questions are being asked about what the opposition researchers were doing during the Republican primary this year. But this is the way that the game was played. And, you know, like I said before, nothing about Trump's campaign has been traditional. So just add this to the list.
Well, what do you think did happen during the primary that this stuff didn't turn up and then get back to him? Was it there were so many candidates that opposition research was limited and maybe Trump was such a public figure that they didn't bother as much with him?
That certainly. But also the fact that Trump was such a dark horse. You know, we're used to the people that look like, you know, Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and you know, Ben Carson and whatnot. Trump was a cartoon character. No one took him seriously. No one thought he was going to register the kind of votes that he did.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're not threatened by someone, when you think, oh no, this is a flame that's going to burn out very quickly. He's not going to, you know, make it long past Iowa. I think it was pretty easy to kind of just dismiss him as sort of a sideshow act. And it wasn't until he started winning some of those early caucuses and early primaries, suddenly everybody kind of went, oh, wait a minute, this guy is here to stay.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, it's a crowded field. He only had to, you know, shore up a very small majority of the votes. And the next thing you know, here we are.
So if his camp did good opposition research and they had found out a lot of the different things that could be used against him, what do you think would have been done differently? I mean, how do they combat any of this stuff, or is it just they try not to bring things up? So maybe they advise Donald Trump, don't go after Bill for his sexual misconduct because they've got a lot of stuff they can pull up about you, so let's avoid that and let's concentrate on this instead?
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing is to prep him ahead of time for what happens when these stories will ultimately come out. His response to the Billy Bush tape was miserable. It was one of the worst responses I've ever seen. It was a traditional non-apology where he immediately pivoted to something completely different and laid the blame at someone else's feet. It was horrifying. It was atrocious. I think that if they'd had the time, if they'd had this information ahead of time, they could have said, you know, Don, this is something we're going to have to deal with at some point in the campaign. We need to have a solid prepared message. You need to be able to come across as likable, so we have to find a way for this to not tank you. But they didn't do that, and so this is what they're left with.
And so do you think that would have worked, Sonia? Do you think if they knew this ahead of time and said to him, okay, let's talk about this, this is going to come out at some point, does he seem like the candidate that is willing to work with his people like that? To me, it seems like, and, you know, I'm not inside the campaign at all, but from watching it publicly, it seems like, hey, I got here by being this guy. I'm going to be this guy all the way to the end. Like, you know, he doesn't want to seem too polished. He's, you know, his teleprompter speeches are so different than when he's just speaking off the cuff. It really is a different persona that isn't what got him where he is. So I wonder if he ever would have gone along with, okay, I'll have a measured, prepared apology for something like this versus just, no, I'm not going to apologize for that because this is ridiculous. And that shouldn't, you know, I just can't imagine him being handled by his handlers in a way that politicians and political people would say makes sense.
I think you nailed it exactly. There is never going to be a person out there who is able to tell Donald, you know, this is how you need to do things, precisely because him just doing him got him to where he is.
Yeah.
You know, he's been, I don't want to talk too much trash about the poor guy because, you know, Lord knows everyone else is doing more than their fair share for me.
Sure.
But, you know, he's kind of born with a silver spoon, you know, from jump, you know, had every opportunity. And people have been, you know, people kowtow to that kind of money and power and authority. And so, you know, he had no reason to think that he would need to play by any set of rules other than his own, because that's what he's been doing his entire catered life. You know, he's never had to apologize. He's never had to be anything other than what he is. He's been able to get away with being, you know, as we've seen on some of those, on those Billy Bush tapes and on those Howard Stern interviews, he's been able to get away with being this arrogant, you know, bold, loudmouthed, you know, misogynistic dude. So why would he need to change now? You know, it won him the primary. But unfortunately, general election voters are a very different beast. And, we've seen what that kind of behavior has done for him in the long game.
Well, he's also, you know, he has been handed money. I mean, I agree with everything you said. However, he must be smart to a certain extent. He got good schooling. He has been in business for a long time. I know he's gone bankrupt, done all these things, but we're going to give him a certain level of just a smartness, right? So he can see that what worked for the primary maybe isn't necessarily working in the general. And so I wonder how much he really desires to win. He doesn't seem to be figuring out, okay, what will it really take to win? Let's go do that. I feel like he's smart enough that I know his ego is incredible, but I do think if he really, truly, in his heart of hearts, wanted this job more than anything, he would change what he's doing to give himself the best chance. Or do you think, no, he really thinks this is the best chance? You know, I'll talk about this later in the show, but there was a Yahoo News article last week that had some insider information that what they're doing now, because I've just been stunned that he's not playing to the middle more, and they're saying that what he's doing is just trying to tar and feather Hillary so bad that it suppresses votes, that he knows his base is going to come out to vote, so if he can limit the amount of people that go vote for Hillary, he can maybe win that way. And so that's the tack they've taken instead of trying to come to the middle and win over the undecideds and win over the people that are leaning one way or the other. Instead of really working for those votes, they're working to stop people from voting for Hillary. So do you think he really wants to win this?
No, I don't think he ever had any intention of winning this.
Really? He's doing all this for the last year, for 15 months?
Well, here's the thing. For the longest time, campaigning for him was really easy. You know, he didn't have to prepare. He would just turn out at these rallies, and there would be throngs of screaming fans chanting his name. You know, for a long time, I'm sure it was a lot of fun. You know, he didn't have to prep. He didn't have to do any work. He just showed up, you know, got all the applause, you know, signed all the autographs, did all the interviews, and, you know, that's a lot of fun. But then when he started to see his numbers drop, you know, he didn't do anything differently. I don't think he ever thought he was going to survive the primary. I think this was all a political stunt just to raise his name, his profile a bit. And then I think he got a taste of it. I think he started to sniff, you know, the possibility of a win, and that sort of drove him even further. But at the end of the day, I don't think he ever had any real designs on the White House. And, you know, I can't speak for the man. I am not in that mindset.
Sure.
Thank God. but can you imagine what a nightmare is in there? But no, I think this was just sort of a long public relations adventure for him. And I think he's already thinking, you know, past November to his next great venture, you know, with the Breitbart people and Roger Ailes. And
do you think it is a Trump TV network? Do you think he's going to a news network next? He's going to create something? Do you think that is? We've heard rumors that his son-in-law has been speaking to people and things like that. Do you think that's his next step?
I think it is. It's what I do.
Well, he's got a base of at least about 50 million, it sounds like, or close to it, that should be, candidates to tune into that. I mean, he's probably been successful then, at least in raising that profile and preparing himself for that. That will be fascinating. What do you see in the last few weeks here, Sonia? Anything you expect to change, or do you think we kind of just go along the same path now? There's no big debates, no big stages that they'll both be on together. It's just these rallies that he's doing all the time and lots of them, and whatever outlandish thing he kind of throws out at the next rally that's going to keep him in the news. This week there were several things. Today he announced it was interesting, a policy thing I actually heard out of him, that he wants term limits for Congress and for the, you know, for senators, he wants it 12 years. And for House members, he wants 6-year term limits. I thought that was interesting and different, and something we hadn't heard in a long time in a national candidacy. But then it's, you know, Hillary got the questions for the last debate, which seems crazy since it was hosted by Chris Wallace. I don't know. What do you see over the last couple of weeks here till we get to Election Day?
I think mercifully things are going to quiet down a bit. There's only so many more bombshells that can possibly be dropped. I think Hillary, you know, with the exception of the you know, the ads and the mailers and all the, you know, the sort of the public relations and the communications leg of her campaign is kind of going to go dark. She doesn't need to speak into any more microphones. You know,
she can only hurt herself at this point, right? I mean, that's what they want to do. Make sure she doesn't make some major mistake that hurts
exactly.
her.
And the longer that Trump stays in the limelight, the more opportunity for him to just fall all over himself and for new things to come out. Because, again, that man never saw a live microphone he didn't love. I think I know that America sort of sighs, you know, collectively at this, but I think we're done with the hard campaigning part of this cycle. And now it's just a question of, you know, early voting has already started in some states. So, you know, now it's just a question of riding this out.
Okay. So, that reminds me, you mentioned he never met a live microphone he didn't like. I think I said something to you like that to you when on Twitter you and I were betting over whether he would quit the debate. You said he wouldn't do the third debate, and he did.
I did say that, didn't I?
Yes.
I thought for sure he would find a way to weasel out of it after his abysmal performance at that first one, but I was wrong.
Yes.
I stand corrected.
Yes. Okay. So I won that bet. I don't know what I won, but here's the thing. Like any good gambler, I want to go double or nothing because I can't walk away with my winnings. So here's what we're going to do now. Let's set an over-under on the amount of states Hillary wins, and then you pick the over or the under.
Do you want to go with states or electoral votes?
I want to go states. I'd like to go. I think that's a little more interesting. Let's take the
All
50
right.
states, and I know it could be that you know that doesn't add up to the electoral votes exactly. It's not like 26 states wins you the election. You could win 30 states and not win the election, probably, right? Because so many have such a small amount of votes. But what's your guess on? Because I've always said this is either going to be a huge blowout by Hillary or an incredibly close race, and if it's that, then Trump wins in my mind. She either wins like 40 states or it's insanely close and then he wins. So what's your over under right now on how many states you think she's going to win?
Oh man, that's a good question. I don't know.
I mean, you're assuming she wins the election.
Mm-hmm. She definitely wins the election.
Okay.
I'm going to say, I'm going to say 38.
You're going to say she wins 38 states.
35. Let's go 35.
35 states.
Mm-hmm.
That would leave him winning, 17? So she doubles him. All right, then I'll tell you what. We will set it at the over-under line at 32 then. If she wins more than 32 or more states, you win, and then you're off the hook.
Awesome.
But if you lose, I don't know what. Then you're really going to owe me.
I am really going to owe you.
I don't know what, but we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Sonia Von Meter, she is a wonderful follow on Twitter at Bourbon Face. I've never gotten the story behind Bourbon Face yet. We'll save that for another interview. But follow her on Twitter at Bourbon Face. And I look forward to we're going to speak again after the election, okay?
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks so much for staying up so late, Sonia.
My pleasure. Take care.